Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, July 8th. I'm Ray Graff. Well, it's been rainy for several days. Before that, it was hot and very humid for what seemed like weeks. That's all got to be good for the garden, right? Well, we'll find out today. It's gardening, and we welcome Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum, and Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery. They're here to answer your questions and help make sure your garden doth grow verily. Give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551 if you have a gardening question. Well, you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Fred, Bob, and Greg, your gardening calls, all coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's gardening today. It feels like old times. We got a threesome here in the studio that are ready to answer your questions. Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Bob Graves of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham. Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery in Great Barrington. Hey, you got a gardening call. I suggest you make that call early. These lines load up when these guys are here. Yeah, the number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Fred, Bob, Greg, welcome back to beautiful Studio A. Isn't it something?
It's great to be back. It really is.
No. It really is nice to be together again.
Isn't it great?
Well, yeah.
No, nothing.
We're just saying, Bob and I, you know, we were here, what, 10 days ago or so?
Yeah.
But we almost didn't recognize Fred.
Well, the beard grew out a little bit.
Oh,
more.
That's right. That's right. Well, it's great to have all three of you.
It's been
back.
A long winter.
Yeah, it really has. You know, Greg was saying, well, we've had enough rain now over at the nursery.
Great Barrington, I don't know the exact numbers, but I think June or July is typically 4 inches of rain for the month, and I think we're at 6.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You've had more than us. Yeah. I'm right by the Albany Airport, and we're still not that high.
No, we're not that bad around us. No. In fact, actually, we for a while there, it was dry, and the rains we were getting just weren't really saturating down in.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, you know, we could use a little bit of your rain.
Well, we're planting grass in our lawn. What we've done is I got a metal detector for Christmas.
Okay.
And my wife and I are digging holes in the backyard. And,
fantastic.
And the yard is so lousy anyway that when we dig holes, we plant grass. And it's coming in so really nicely now.
Excellent way to seed your lawn.
Yeah.
And so you might get rich doing it.
No, hardly.
That's a roundabout way to cultivate prior to seeding.
Well,
I will say.
You know me. I'd rather have just weeds up there, and I don't care. But as long as we're digging holes.
What was the most interesting
It's funny. You know, here's the thing about that. And I don't want to talk about metal detecting on this show, but I'd love to do a whole show on it. We found day after Christmas, a 1943 silver dime.
Wow.
And I'm like, wow, this is going to be easy. Okay.
It's been hard ever since.
Since then, we have found 8,000 nails.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's been great.
Awesome.
All right, this email came in from Shelley. Shelley says, I want to turn some of my lawn into a meadow of native plants. Do you have any tips?
Yeah, so there's, you know, a pretty easy way. Mowing down your lawn short, and then sort of almost scarifying it. You can sometimes do this with a mower, or you can rake it out so that you're really beating up the area. And then you, of course, before you do all that, you might want to order some kind of native mix. There's you know, there's a few ways to do that. There is a place over in Springfield area, Mass, New England Wetland Plants. They do one. And then there's a company out of, I think it's Pennsylvania, called Ernst Seed, and they'll do one for you as well. They'll put one together for you.
Okay.
I would be careful of going out and buying a wildflower mix and just throwing that around, because that's often very unsatisfactory.
It is. A lot of times you'll get a real lot of
one thing
or two things because it's just going to be the nature of it. And it takes a little bit of a a number of years to really establish a real good pollinator meadow, yeah. wildflower meadow, and mowing and scarifying and really trying to discourage certain plants and encourage others. But I've seen that time and time again.
You don't just go out there and throw some seeds around
and have you're going to get like two or three different species and a lot of them won't grow. So it does take a little bit more than that. But it's not hard and it's a good way to go.
All right, this one's from Jacob in Cohoes. I planted milkweed for the monarchs this year and I've seen some white foam under the leaves where they meet the stem. Is this monarch eggs or something from the plants or something else altogether I should worry about? That is from Jacob in Cohoes.
Yeah, no, it's probably one of two things. One is it's most likely an insect called a spit bug, which creates like a little spit-like substance, and it often hides under leaves because it could be preyed upon by other insects or birds. The other thing it could be, which I don't think it's this, but the actual plant milkweeds always produce white latexy kind of sap.
Oh.
And so if it had a little crack, it could make a little white pocket. But my gut feeling would be probably the spit bug first.
And if you just reach into the spittle, you'll find a little green like leafhopper-like thing in there.
Yeah, well, I'll be darned. Yeah. What's the entomological point of a bug that makes spittle?
My gut feeling would be, you know, probably more towards a protection.
It
kind of screens it, it camouflages, it can feed within its little...
Just gross out all the other bugs.
It grosses them right out. Yeah. They don't want to touch it. Who's going to eat that?
You can't see them.
And they don't see them. No, yeah. And they don't do any harm, really, for the most part. So nothing to worry about.
Now, I know I have very limited knowledge of most things, frankly, but I thought isn't milkweed dangerous?
That is it sap. Endangered or dangerous?
No, dangerous.
It can be.
The sap is
poisonous. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to eat it. It can cause some swelling of the tongue. And
yeah. But if you know what you're doing, you can eat the classic common milkweed when prepared properly. And you know, there's a number of things. So before you do this, you definitely want to look it up. Yeah. But it's actually quite tasty. The shoots are good.
You've done this.
Oh yeah.
Of course he has.
You know what else is neat is those little tiny pods that they start to form before they actually form. You pop them off. You saute them up. They're like almost like cheese inside them.
Really?
But you do have to prepare them properly.
If I'm lost in the woods, I want Fred with me.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Gather up some of the spittle bugs. We'll put them as croutons on a salad. Hey.
We'll go for the fish first, then we'll go for the milkweed, though.
Yeah. All right, if you can tell, it's the gardening show, and we'll get to your calls in a moment. 800-348-2551. One more email, and then we'll hit the phones. This one's from Jay. Jay says, what can you plant now, flowers and vegetables, that'll show up in the fall? When is the ideal time for putting down grass seed at a pre-emergent? Well, that's three questions. Jay, what about now, flowers and veggies? What'll show up in the fall?
Well, if he's talking about veggies, you can, you know, certainly be replanting things like beans, beets, radishes, lettuce.
Things that are quick.
Yep.
Yeah. Not corn.
Okay.
Not corn. And for flowers, I mean, you can still be planting annuals now if you can find them. And, you know, those will bloom now through the fall. And there's there's several dozens of perennials that will bloom in August and September.
Yeah, some real nice stuff.
All right. In terms of the lawn, September's best time.
Okay. And why is that?
Because it cools off, but you get some rain. It's not quite so hot, a little easier. The trick with grass is if you keep it wet, it grows, and if you don't, it doesn't. And it's easier in September.
When is the ideal time for putting down a pre-emergent, whatever that is?
Earlier in the year, April.
What's a pre-emergent?
Prevents crabgrass seed, primarily, is what he's looking to do.
Oh, I see.
And if you're going to do it in the fall, I wouldn't bother.
It basically suffocates or stifles the newly emerging seed, prevents it from happening.
There's a reason I don't know what it is, because my lawn is entirely crabgrass. Now I understand. All right, let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551. Chris in Claverick. Chris, you're on.
Oh, good afternoon.
Hello.
I have a question about a hydrangea. I purchased a blue hydrangea, planted it. Now it's several years ago. And I get no blooms now at all. There were not very many in the beginning anyway, but now nothing. And I wondered what I can do.
Well, our guess is that that's probably one of the newer varieties, like an Endless Summer, that were supposed to be all the rage when they first came out. And they don't bloom quite as reliably as we thought they were going to. There are some newer varieties that are better. But what we find with those, and what I find with mine in particular, and Greg, see if you agree with me on this, you need to fertilize them a lot more than you think you do in order to get the growth up. They've got to get more growth because they usually die back a bit.
Yeah, definitely fertilizing and, you know, in limited or no late summer fall winter pruning, so leaving the wood up and intact and fertilizing, which will, you know, take a season to actually take effect.
Right.
are the two you know, best things you can do.
Yep. Sometimes the winter buds on those flowers are not hardy, and no matter what you do, it's really hard to get those flowers to produce nice blooms for you. But the foliage looks wonderful too. So a little bit of shelter screening for the winter sometimes helps. Burlap with some stakes, make a little burlap kind of cage or fence around it, helps to protect it against the winter winds.
Big difference.
That could sometimes work really well. I know we've recommended that over the years.
I have been noticing this year that they are established ones are performing better.
I think so too.
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah, I think partly because we had some good weather early in the season and didn't get dry as early as it did last year.
Yep.
Hey, Chris, we're going to take a break here. Thank you for the call. It's Gardening Today with Fred and Bob and Greg and you at 800-348-2551. We'll be right back. Pop on WAMC. Not really gardening appropriate music, but what the heck. Greg Ward is here, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves, all in Studio A to answer your questions, and they're very excited about it, except Bob, he's so on it. Joan in Connecticut. No, you're all right?
I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good.
All right, Joan, you're joining the party. Come.
Yes, thank you. I have a question about the tomatoes. When I planted them, I threw a handful of earthworm castings in the hole. I made sure to plant them deep so that the roots would develop from the stem. They're not bushing out, and I have very few flowers, and I'm concerned, and I wondered if there's anything I can do.
Boy,
how's the color? How's the foliage color, and how much foliage is there?
There's a moderate amount, but from my memory of growing tomatoes before, they aren't as bushy. They don't have as many leaves, and they aren't as bushy as I'm used to seeing them. But the color is pretty good. There might be an occasional yellowish one on the bottom, but not. No, the leaves are green.
Is it the same varieties that you've been growing over the years, or is it something new? Mm-hmm. New source, new variety this year.
One of them is new, but the other, I've grown Juliet's and Sun Golds and Jet Stars.
Are they in containers or in the ground?
They're in the ground.
In the ground.
I think that if the exposure is strong, you have lots of sun, then, you know, adding additional fertilizer, and you could do that with the worm castings or some, you know, other fertilizer source, organic fertilizer source, would be the best thing I could recommend.
Certainly check the pH, because if the pH is off, your fertilizer isn't going to work. The other thing I'd say is
I've been reluctant to put fertilizer on them because I know you don't want to get too much nitrogen in there.
If you use a slow release organic, you'd be all right.
Yeah, or a balanced fertilizer in general. If your soil doesn't have that kind of high level nutrition or high compost type soil, depletions. Tomatoes will use resources. They can be resource guzzlers.
They really do not like the weather we've had either. They don't like it to be dry and hot and wet and cold. They don't like the fluctuation.
Yeah, they're not liking this weather too much, at least what we're getting.
Yeah. Well, what would be the nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium ratio that you're recommending?
So most of the organic fertilizers that you would find today, the numbers are very low. They're where the first number is nitrogen, second one is phosphorus, third one is potassium, right? So like a 4-3-2 is probably about as high a number ratio as you would see. You may see a 3-3-3 or a 3-2-2, something like that would work fine.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like
something that had high middle number.
I don't think usually when you get a soil test done, there is adequate phosphorus in the soil most of the time. That's the way it comes out. So in this case, I'm going to say that it is nitrogen that you're, that's always what's limiting. That you need to add a little bit more of that. And if you do it now, as I think we all realize, August is tomato season.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's really not early July. And so we've got plenty of time still, is what I'm saying.
Joan, thanks a lot for the call. The number here on The Gardening Show is 800-348-2551. And David is in New Paltz. Hello, David.
Hello, Ray. Thanks for a good show there.
Thanks.
I would like to know how to, when it's legal, to grow marijuana.
Ah, well, Greg Ward, it's been legal there for some time. You've been growing your own plants, I assume.
Yeah, so Fred, how do you do it?
Well, you know, the brown side down, the green side up, and it should go pretty good.
Well, you know, side down.
This is the roots in the ground, the green side up.
Oh yeah, like a normal plant.
Like a normal plant, and you're going to end up getting pretty good results. And the reason why is because it's a weed. It grows aggressively.
It needs a lot of sun on the lightest.
I don't know where you would get the seeds.
You can order the seeds online. You know, I'm sure you could even do that now that, you know, even before your the things. So you can order the seeds online. Long days are important, the light levels. And then the seeds will usually have, predominantly female plants and give you a specific, bud size and count.
Huh. Do you have a lot of people asking you about this at the store?
Not a lot about how to grow. Most of the people who come in have been doing it for years.
Ah, so they're telling you.
They come in to buy soil. Mostly
they want soil and some nutrient products.
Now, David, I'm not sure what the law is, but I don't know if it's legal to do this in New York yet.
They said 18 months after the law is passed,
could
grow six plants, mature, and three immature.
Wow.
Same time.
All right. So in a year and a half, we'll have Grateful Dead bumper music on every gardening show. David, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. Lena in Monterey. Lena, you're on.
Yes. I would have a commercial company come to spray for ticks, which are terrible this year, and mosquitoes. And I'd like to know how the spray, that pesticide, could affect, say, lilac trees and lily of the valley and the sedum bushes and other plants and flowering plants in general.
Usually the things that someone who's in the business would be spraying are not very toxic. They're trying to use things that are really safe for your plant material because they don't want to have a problem. So in general, those things I don't think are going to cause you much problem with existing plants. Now, you need to find out what they're spraying ahead of time, but usually these guys are pretty careful about
that. The one thing I would say, though, when you are, and I understand the need to do something with ticks because they are really bad.
Yeah, what's up with that?
It's just been an explosion. I think the weather has been, kind of perfect for not so good for tomatoes, but boy, it's been good for ticks.
Yeah.
But you have a lot of natural biological controls that are in your landscapes, and the trend globally is to try to manage landscapes more with a conservation of biological controls. Now, these are these insects that eat other insects.
You told us what the best critters. Animal was for that once.
For ticks, it's possums.
Possums.
There's nothing that eats more.
Really?
And you can certainly get guinea hens and chickens and free-range chickens. Guinea hens are also good. But
yes, my neighbors will love it if I have guinea hens running around the yard.
The possum
pound for pound, nothing eats more ticks than possums. But getting back to your question, we do want you do want to know what they're spraying because although it shouldn't hurt your plants, if it is taking out a lot of beneficials, there could be negative results because now you could have pest explosions where you didn't have them if they're taking out generally a large number of stuff. So the less toxic, the better.
How would I know which pesticides are better than others and in what amounts?
Well, I think, the internet can be dangerous, and it can be really helpful. Googling that, getting some, doing some research as to which chemicals are the ones to avoid and which ones to use, it should be pretty available as long as you're getting it from a good source. So, when you start to get things from universities like Ohio State Extensions and other, Cornell University, you're going to get some really good information. If you just Google it, I can't even tell you some of the stuff that that comes up on search engines.
I don't think you want
is treated even with pruning. It's like you can't even believe some of the stuff that's like it's broadcasted like facts.
Go to
but it's not coming from
Land
a good
university. The place to get
universities are great. Yeah. So, a little research on your part could do a lot of good.
Well, Lena, thanks so much. 800-348-2551 if you have a gardening question for Fred or Greg or Bob or all three. And our buddy Joan in Schenectady. Hello, Joan.
Hello, all y'all. This is a very good show today, gentlemen.
Well, thank you. It's very rare, but thank
you're
you.
Welcome.
Appreciate it.
No, it's good much of the time. Almost all the time. Let's just say all the time, all so right. I keep getting my phone calls in.
Oh, you'll get on anyway. Go ahead.
Ah, thanks. I think this question is a follow-up for Greg. You gave me the wonderful tip about digging a trench for the potatoes, the seed potatoes, and then filling it in as it grew. They look fabulous. How do I know when to see if there's some maybe baby potatoes? I have some redskins that went in first. Do I pluck a whole plant? Do I carefully move some ground aside to see if I can find one the right size?
So you want to
suggest?
You want to eat some. You want to harvest some. Is that what you're saying?
I want to harvest a few as babies and leave a bunch to grow bigger.
Yeah, I mean each section you planted is now a plant, and it's going to develop new potatoes, some nice small potatoes. So you would take up one or more plants. You'd make your row a little shorter. You could consider harvesting, digging down gently, harvesting the potato and leaving the plant intact. But you probably want a few potatoes, right? So it's usually you just take up the plant. Do that.
Yeah. Another trick that I have done though that does work is that you when you hill them up like you're advocating that they do, once they start to flower, generally what I do is I don't really hill them much at that point anymore. And then about 2 weeks after they flower, I've found that if you just pull away some of the soil right around the top, you'll get a handful of small potatoes, and you can kind of go carefully, not to break the plants, carefully go around just a couple of inches, depending on how high your mounds or piles are, and you could get a handful of small potatoes off of a number of plants and have a nice little dinner or whatever. And then I don't harvest the main plants until the foliage goes back down.
Right. So that, I don't know if you could get potatoes today with that, though.
No, my potatoes aren't flowering yet.
Right.
So
right.
Not now. You would want to wait till you see blooms. And 2 weeks after the bloom, that's when you would gently go down around the top of them and pull out just a few little guys. Those little, but they are good, those little guys.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Delicious.
Perfect.
Yep.
Perfect. And 2 weeks after the bloom, and then later for the big guys.
And then let everything else die down like you normally do and go in and get your big guys later.
All right, Joan, thank you very much. It's the Gardening Show today. Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Bob Graves. You know, that's the one thing we never tried to grow is potatoes. You can do that around here?
Real easy.
Oh, potatoes are easy.
Yeah, you could grow them in a five-gallon pail if you wanted to.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that might not be bad. Some real fresh French fries. All right. Sally in Duanesburg. Sally, you're on.
No.
So, Sally hung up.
Hello.
Oh, hello. Oh, you're on.
I'm there.
Okay.
Yes. Sorry.
That's fine.
I asked the question of spring purple flower, green leaves about a foot long, and purple flower with round white bulbs. Can you tell me what that is?
Allium.
It's almost like a border.
Yeah.
It's almost like a border flower.
Yeah.
Allium, they say.
Is it a big, it's like a big old seed head, like a big chive, an oversized chive, if you know what that is? Like a big onion flower?
No.
No?
No.
Is it a shrub or tree or a perennial?
It's perennial.
It sounded like allium.
Yeah, I mean, these flower are round and maybe golf ball size or bigger?
No, it's not round. It's not round.
And when
it
did,
has,
when did it bloom?
Early spring.
So April, May.
Yeah, May.
Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a picture of it? You can send it to VoxPop at WAMC.org and I'll show it to the fellas.
Well, right now I'm just digging up the bulbs, flower is no longer there.
I see.
It doesn't last very long.
Most good things don't, Sally. Isn't that the case?
We might need a photo to get your ID correct on that one, but it wouldn't be too hard to ID it. So
but
if you wanted to send it to one of us,
it does help to know it grows from a bulb, though.
Yep.
Yeah.
And how tall are they again? How tall from the ground?
Maybe a foot, 3 inches. I tried to do it like a border, and the bulbs are prolific. You just keep digging and digging and digging.
And it's not a spike of the purple is not a spike. In other words, a stem with lots of flowers in sort of a pyramidal or pointy shape.
No. It's not a spike.
Okay.
We need a photo. Mm-hmm.
All right, I guess you stumped the band, Sally, and that's exciting when these guys don't know the answer. It makes me feel slightly less dumb, but not for long. Sally, thank you very much. We'll go to the next call, and we go to Maggie in Schenectady. Maggie.
Hi, guys. My husband and I purchased about 20 Green Giant arborvitae plants online last year, and they all planted very well. We wrapped them in burlap and protected them during the winter. And when we unwrapped them this spring, 4 of the trees right in a row were brown and then eventually just became brittle and they died. And some of them have a couple of green leaves on them still, but I'm not sure if I should just count it as a loss and just get rid of those trees and then replant 4 new trees, or if there's something that I can do to revive them.
Well, you know, I would say if they're not green at this point in the game and they're brown, they're not going to come back at this point in the game. So the ones that are definitely brown can be replaced. The ones that have a little green on them depends on what, you know, how little we're talking, but generally arborvitaes can do pretty good at revitalizing themselves and coming back from like older wood. But if you only have a little sprig or two, it's got to have enough leaves to make the food to keep the plant rolling. So, you know, probably going to lose those.
Makes me suspicious that all 4 of them are in a row that you're having the trouble with, that they're contiguous to each other. And that often means to me that maybe they were
suspicious about that too.
They may be planted too deep, or it might be a little bit of a wetter spot. Something's not right in that spot.
Or a drier spot.
Or it could be a drier spot. Yep. But if it's like that, it's not an insect or disease usually. It's something cultural.
Yeah. Yep. Is when you put them in, do you know if you installed them? They're sort of like a little stem, and then it hits the roots, and that little zone is called the root flare. We want to keep that root flare kind of like close to ground level. A little bit above is good. Too deep, though, you'll lose plants, woody plants that way. So I don't know if that's an option. Also, depending on when you put them in, you said fall. If they didn't get enough water up through the fall to kind of get that root establishment, it could have been a drought issue, too.
We planted them in the spring. And we had a soaker hose on them all summer.
Okay.
It was an exceptionally dry, you know, we can't remember that now, but exceptionally dry year last year, right into the fall in many places. And so going into the fall, you know, somewhat stressed, the Green Giant arborvitaes do often show some dieback. And it sounds like possibly the 4 were drier than the other 16.
Very well might have been.
All right, Maggie, thank you very much. The number is 800-348-2551. Gardening. We'll grab one more before our next break. Joyce in Troy. Joyce.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. I have squirrels digging up little tiny holes all over my backyard. I've been in this house for 49 years, and this is the first problem I've had with the squirrels. It's very bizarre. Can you help me?
Oh, boy.
And you see them doing it. You see the squirrels?
I see them doing it, yes. They're busy little creatures.
You know, there are just more little fuzzy creatures around than there were 20 or 30 or 40 years ago. Did voles,
but a squirrel is a common, you know.
Oh, yeah, but I did just more of them.
Yep, the populations go up and down quite a bit, like Bob had mentioned.
There's diseases that affect them that cause the population to go up and
this
down.
This year, predators. I've seen more than normal.
You know, there may be something that's growing near you that's producing seeds or nuts. That
I live in a regular middle-class neighborhood,
yeah, me too.
And I have neighbors on either side of me.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is the first time this has happened in 49 years. Do you know what they're digging for?
I mean, obviously there's something they like there. So I had just mentioned possibly insect larvae, little grubs. They would eat those. They'll
interesting.
Eat everything.
Yeah. I mean,
have you had calls from other people with the similar problem?
This is the first one.
No, we did have a call from a guy who wanted to make a squirrel a pet, but that was a different show. And frankly, that was just a little odd. Is there anything that Joyce can do to try to keep the squirrels at bay?
Squirrels are really hard.
Yeah, I mean, you might want to try like cayenne pepper. Sometimes that can deter rodents. Squirrels can be a little persistent, but and the cayenne pepper would be very short-lived.
There are some repellents that are, you know, rotten egg, garlic concoctions, yep, that you can spread
and
around and try.
The castor bean.
Yep. Could I put a little piece sliver of garlic in each of the many holes they have dug and are continuing to dig?
Sure. You could try that. Could try sprinkling the cayenne pepper, rotted egg, garlic mixed, if you really want to get heavy duty with this, and sprinkle it around all those areas where they're digging. My gut feeling would be that it would deter them in the short term. And sometimes that's all you have to do is deter them in the short term.
Get them to move on.
They move on, and now they got a new, you know, someone else has got a problem.
So thanks, Joyce. I just had an idea, and this might be crazy, but if you had the money and you bought, you know, you got the garlic powder. If you had enough to fill one of those things, those broadcasters, could you put it over your lawn and not kill it?
It's not going to hurt the lawn. Yeah, you know, you'd have to get really obsessive with that mound to affect the lawn, I think Bob would say. I mean, we're talking a lot more garlic than anybody's going to want to put down. So you could definitely grind them up, I think it would be growing garlic.
I think it wouldn't hurt the lawn.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you buried the lawn in garlic. Wow. But I think your neighbors would notice after a little while.
Well, you know, my neighbors would probably see it as an improvement. But, you know, that's another story. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Gardening. We'll be back. Welcome back to Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551. You won't believe the things we talk about during the break, and you'll never, ever, ever know. This email from Steve. Steve says, lilies, trumpet, oriental, Asiatic, is it better to plant fall or spring? Seems so sold both seasons. I don't know what that means.
They're sold
in both. If fall, are they okay stored in an unheated garage? Is a large container move outside in spring?
Oh,
you got to punctuate, Steve. It's so, like James Joyce.
So typically you have a bulb and you can plant it in the spring or you can plant it in the fall. Either one. It really depends on when you get them. You can also plant them now started. And if someone has them growing in a pot, you can just insert the whole thing into the ground. Now, I think he's saying he wants to grow them in a container indefinitely. Is he saying that?
It's hard to say. Let me get my decoder ring and we'll try it again.
It sounded like that.
It doesn't say. It just says.
That can work also.
Okay.
And so I had a neighbor many years ago. He would keep lilies in large pots, large, you know, nursery grow pots. And he would, because Asiatic and Oriental bloom at different times, he would replace the 15-inch pot full of lilies. He would pull one out and then put another one in his garden so he could do it. And then he wintered the pots by the way we usually say. You put them up against the north side of your garage. You cover them with a little poly, maybe some leaves after they've frozen so you don't get any rodents in there. And then they wintered quite nicely.
Generally
that way.
Speaking, the bulbs are more available in the spring or in the fall?
Oh, I think in the spring.
In the spring, yeah. We have plants now, but we don't have any bulbs left.
Yeah, the selection, I think, in the fall is a little more limited.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
All right, a couple of more emails here, and then we'll go back to the phones till the end of the program. This one's from Joan writes, from your umpteenth Joan of the day. Well, I think that's only three, Joan, and, you know, the more Joans, the merrier. Lavender, proper care. My lavender bush is several years old, overgrowing its space. Should I prune it back? If so, when?
I always suggest that you do some significant pruning in post-bloom, so mid-summer or late summer. So right now they're probably at peak bloom. Yep. They're just looking – they should be looking at their best. But sometime in August early August, maybe late August, pruning them back fairly significant is not a bad idea. It gives them plenty of time to rejuvenate and look sort of soft, have a lot of – winter new growth, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Joan goes on, says, last year I let the blooms dry on the bush. Is that the way to do it? I harvested blooms and leaves late and let them continue to dry with good results for sachet.
Oh, sure.
Hey, if it works, don't change it.
Yeah, I would say.
Okay. Number two here from Joan. Is it okay to let a regular rose bush, not a climber, grow long, tied to a trellis, or should the branches be pruned?
If it's not a climber, you want to prune it because climbers bloom on old wood, but most other roses bloom on new wood, so you want more new wood, which means you want to prune.
Okay, and now or in the fall?
You can do it both if you need to, but certainly in the fall.
Sometimes in the spring, too, you would come in and cut out the dead wood, at least in particular, and shorten some of the longer.
I mean, we trim them a little bit all season. Keep them blooming.
Right, so that's what you're pruning them, you know, severely in the spring, and then after every major bloom, you do some kind of light pruning to get the next bloom to look good again.
All right, final question from Joan, and then we'll hit the phones again. Is it okay to let wild violet plants overtake my lawn? They're filling in where the grass is poor. I don't have great luck with seeding other varieties, such as bluegrass. What grows best in the city environment without a lot of light?
You know, personally, I think that's a great thing to do, is let your violets grow in your turf. But that's coming from a woody plant guy where turf is the enemy in terms of competition with the woody plants.
Right.
That being said, pollinators are huge right now. We need to do as much things as we can to try to help pollinators stay in our area, native pollinators in particular.
In shade, if you can get anything to grow,
violet.
It, because the grass isn't going to grow.
No, exactly. And on top of that, you can another edible, violets. You can when prepared correctly.
Tell me the truth, Fred. On any given weekend, you'll just go out in the backyard and just start grazing. Is that true?
Well, lately it's been mushroom season, right?
Really? So you got to be careful, Fred.
You definitely do. You got to know what you're doing. But if you know what you're doing, it's like tree identification. Is it a sugar maple? It is. Okay. If it is, it's not. We're not guessing our way through this stuff. And I always say with everyone who's asked questions about eating wild stuff, if you're not 100% sure, don't eat it. I feed my kids love mushrooms. I right now it's chanterelle season. It's prolific.
Expensive, good stuff.
And it's been a good year for not so much for the tomatoes, but really good for chanterelles. I have kids that are fighting over mushrooms.
Really?
At home at dinner time. I can't get them to eat veggies though.
I know YouTube.
That's going to be dangerous at Ray's house if they start fighting.
So the right thing in the right time of year, it could be quite gourmet, not just survival, right?
Okay, fair enough. Fred makes a mistake. It's 2:10. Where's Fred? Fred's lost. He's in Ohio now.
It's good with a little dandelion wine, too.
No, it's not, Bob. You know that's true. Caroline and Kinderhook. Caroline, you're on. Aha, for Pete's sake. Hello, are you there?
Hi, I'm here. Sorry, I had to just step away for a sec.
Okay, you're on.
I guess.
Go ahead.
Oh, great.
Okay.
Hello. I'm just trying to take. Okay, there. I'm all set.
All right.
I'm calling because I have lilac bushes that were here when we moved into the place a few years ago. And they were pretty happy and healthy looking, but now they've gotten so tall in 3 years' time, and they are producing very few blossoms, and the blossoms aren't particularly fragrant. So I thought, cut them back, obviously. But everyone I speak to who seems to know anything about gardening says you don't cut lilacs.
Oh, you definitely cut lilacs, for sure. Timing is the key. After they bloom, that's the ideal time to go in there and do some selective cutting. The taller canes could be reduced. We generally recommend about third of the oldest, biggest stalks can be kind of cut back all the way to ground level, letting the smaller stalks or stems take dominance. If it's just a shaping thing, you can come in and cut back to laterals or little buds. But right after the bloom, if you prune anytime else, it's not gonna kill your shrub, but it's gonna take away your flowers.
Makes me suspicious when you say you're having trouble with lilacs blooming. If they're not in full sun, they're not gonna bloom and they're gonna stretch.
Good point, Bob.
So, if they're getting any amount of shade and the shade may be increasing over time, that's a problem.
Yep, they do like full sun to get that full bloom. Yeah. They'll live in the shade.
They'll live, but they won't bloom.
They won't give you the flowers you want.
Caroline, thanks so much for the call. Debbie is in Albany. Hi, Debbie, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm just wondering if you could give me some help with a Japanese maple. It is wilting branch by branch, and it is making me cry to see it go. Yeah. It's about 15 years old, about 4 feet tall. Came back fine this year, a little bit sparse, but filled in, leaves burgundy, beautiful, and all of a sudden I started to notice this wilt that was happening literally almost branch by branch. I took samples of the leaves and pictures to probably three nurseries in the area. And their first question was fertilizer. I really probably had not put the appropriate fertilizer on it.
So we're all thinking about a thing that's a internal fungus called verticillium.
Yeah.
And that's what I was afraid you were going to tell me.
Yeah. And you can determine it yourself by removing a branch and dissecting it longitudinally and seeing if there's some black within the very white wood.
And I've done that. The last nursery I went to, I've done that and snipped. I got rid of any old branch that was obviously dead. I've taken the branches where the wilt is existing. And I'm not seeing anything in the wood of those branches.
What you've got is a vascular problem, which can either be a clogging by this fungus, but it can also be damage from the wintertime. Sometimes in the wintertime, the tissue warms up and the vascular system shatters at sundown when we get really cold weather. And you got a bunch of pipes that are frozen and leaky. And it can be just a winter damage, too, that doesn't show up until there's high demand for moisture when it gets hot. Mm-hmm. So if you don't see what Greg's talking about, where you cut a branch and you look and see if there's any discoloration on that dissection, if you don't see that, it could be a vascular collapse as a consequence of winter kill.
Yeah, and one other thing to look at would be if the tree was having a root issue, it would also have that kind of wilty symptom branch by branch. And when I say root issue, it could be that you have a girdling root that has been on this plant for a long time, and it's just starting to create trouble. And you mentioned also that you sort of said it was a little thinner, I believe you said, last year without seeing the wilt.
Year.
So a lot
this
of times
coming
when
back.
Yeah, a lot of times a girdling root is a root that kind of wraps around the main stem. You'll know that if you look at your trunk when it comes down and hits the meets the ground, it should flare out and sort of flare out on all sides. And if you see that trunk kind of going straight down into the soil or even straight with no flare on one side, that's going to indicate that you've got some root issues. And and if you don't see that black kind of fungal markings that Greg had mentioned, then it could certainly very well be a root related issue. And one of the big tests would be, do you see a real nice straight trunk going straight into the ground, or do you see a nice root flare? And
what I'm looking at is going straight down into the ground.
I had a feeling you were going to say that. So since you've checked those other boxes off by saying no to them, my gut feeling is that it's probably related to the roots, and it might very well be a girdling root. If you were to excavate out carefully around that trunk, I'm going to bet you, since it's straight in, that you're going to start to see roots that are not going out, radiating out from that trunk like a bicycle wheel or spokes of a rim, which is how roots are supposed to radiate out from the trunk. You're going to see ones that are kind of wrapping around. You might even find, wow, I got a really big one in there that's really wrapping. And believe it or not, with some tree surgery, depending on how bad it is, sometimes just removing a root or two could make a big difference in the tree's life and stretch it out. So I would ask you to sort of look under the ground a little bit. You could use an old spoon to kind of excavate out a little trowel. Try not to dig, and dig into the trunk when you do it. But I'm going to bet you find some kind of girdling root that's cut down there underground.
Anybody else? No? Good. Yep. Debbie, thanks a lot for the call. By the way, an email. Remember we were trying to identify that purple flower?
Yeah.
Leslie wrote in, I believe the caller is talking about Jesse Starflower. I thought that was a professional wrestler, but apparently it's a plant. Jesse Starflower? No?
Nice common name that I don't think any of us recognize.
Okay.
There are lots of spring bulbs that have a purple color, and that we were trying to determine that. But
You never heard that name before?
Flowers, not one of them.
Okay, well then, if you guys don't know, then obviously Leslie is making it up.
We learn something new every day.
Congratulations, Leslie. You put one over on us. I hope you feel good about that. Hannah and Hadley. Hannah, you got a couple of minutes here. Go ahead.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I have this very mossy spot in between two trees, two maple trees, and it's like nothing seems to grow there. I just wanted to know what could grow possibly in the shade, and that collects a lot of water because it is on a bit of an incline from the house.
You sort of have your answer already because the moss is growing.
Yeah.
You know, getting heavy shade like that that's wet, you're not going to grow you're not going to grow grass. That's not going to happen. You might be able to put in some shade-tolerant perennials, maybe Pachysandra or Hosta. I don't know. Have other thoughts on that, Greg?
Ferns. Ferns are always pretty – or not all of them, but Christmas fern, what's the other one that's – you know, a lot of the wood ferns are pretty drought-tolerant. Maple shade is the hardest place to grow things, so you need things that will grow in very dry conditions.
Yep. If you lift the canopy up a little bit, remove some of the lower limbs on the tree, you're going to increase some of the light. It might help a little bit.
Yep.
What do you think, Hannah?
Well, yeah, I suppose the trees could use a trim, and I just I don't like what everyone else is doing. They just cut their trees down on the whole street. It's not good, but the moss, if I cut them back, maybe if I put, what'd you say, Cassandra? Or
Pachysandra is a cover that grows well in the shade.
Oh, I've never heard of that. I could, I'm going to look that up.
It really propagates.
I would love to put, that would be great. Oh, my gosh. Anything to take the moss out.
You may want to stick with the moss.
Yeah, moss is not a bad thing. A lot of people try to get moss to grow.
Really?
I mean, if you're not if you're a turf grass guy.
Obviously, he's not.
Well, there you go. That's a great point. All right, Bob Graves, how do people find Fadigan's on the old World Wide Web?
Fadigan'sNursery.com.
Where are you located?
We're on Troy Schenectady Road in Latham, just a little bit past the airport road.
And Greg Ward, how about Ward's Nursery?
Yeah, we're at 600 South Main Street, Great Barrington, Massachusetts, or wardsnursery.com.
And Fred Breglia, what's going on at the Landis Arboretum in 8 seconds?
You can visit our website, landisarboretum.org, for everything Landis. We're located 174 Lape Road, Esperance, New York.
Great having you guys back in the studio. Let's do it again.
It's great.
Let's not do it again tomorrow, but maybe next month, yeah?
As soon as you get back.
You guys call us on short notice.
All right, gentlemen, thanks a lot for being here. Support comes from Watercolors by Edith Shutesbury. Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, paintings of people and pets from emailed photographs, no contact required. Edith-Hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York, providing more than 40 miles of trails for nature therapy and exploration beyond the shore of Lake George. HikeLakeGeorge.org. And Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, accepting new clients, Careers in Transition, LLC.com. Once again, thanks to Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, and Greg Ward for joining us. Thank you for listening. Apologies to the many folks who didn't get through today. We'll be doing this again very shortly. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Susie Checkeye back today, screening the calls. It's been a while. Nice to see you back. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, we talk French food with Kevin Tai. C'est bon. That's tomorrow at 2. Stand by now for the Capital Connection.